the Pharisees are doing their mental gymnastics to try to figure out what's allowable on the Sabbath and what isn't, and they're just having a difficult time with themselves. And Jesus kind of simplifies things for them very quickly, almost into a kind of natural law argument, right? He just says, you know, the Sabbath was made for man. It's just very kind of simple. And it reminds me, in the pro-life cause, I remember some African cardinal who somebody was questioning about the availability of abortion in Africa, and he just said, very simply, we don't kill our children. That was all he really had to say. We just don't do that. And that's the kind of simplicity that sometimes is so effective. Today is the march and love for life. And so ironically, it requires, frankly, none of the gospel to support it because it's part of the natural law. Obviously, the gospel does support it, but the real argument in so many ways is simply the natural law argument. We probably all know what it means, a time to recognize the sanctity of human life and the despicable horrors of abortion, euthanasia, embryonic stem cell research, and so on. You may have also heard that even some Catholics erroneously hold these horrors sometimes to be acceptable, which is, of course, a great scandal. Even we are not immune from the eroding effect of culture, right, in various ways. So it's a great battle between two philosophies. You've probably heard this before, the quality of life ethic and the sanctity of life ethic. The quality of life ethic just sounds so endearing, doesn't it? The quality of life ethic just makes you want to get right behind it. We all want quality of life. But it's insidious. The first book on this to win public acceptance was Life Unworthy of Life. That was the title. Written by some doctors in Germany just before World War II as the basis in the beginning of the Nazi medical practice. It's somewhat simple. In it, human life is judged by whether it is wanted by another, whether it has too much pain, whether it is physically or mentally handicapped. Does it sound familiar? I've been reading slowly, I don't have much time to read, this biography of Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, of his life. And I was struck, you know, it talks about his years during World War II, right in that period, with his family, a young Joseph Ratzinger. And it speaks of young Joseph Ratzinger's cousin, the son of his mother's sister, who was only a few months younger than he and was born with Down syndrome. One day the Nazis came to take him away from home. Sometime later, a notice arrived saying the young man had died. The quality of life ethic at its draconian worst. Similarly, an acquaintance of the Ratzinger family, Frau Westenhahner, drifted gradually into dementia after her husband's death. She was therefore taken into custody by several government officials who brought her to Linz, where, according to the official report, she died, even though everybody knew she had been killed. I'm sure in that generation, in that locale, they all knew what that meant and what was going on, had little control over it. So is this quality of life ethic position true? Well, truth should have the qualities of correspondence to reality and internal consistency and coherence. So we will judge it according to that measure. Correspondence to reality. If one looks into the eyes of their beautiful child and says, "You, my little darling, had no right to exist unless I deem it so." Does that sound like selfishness or Christian charity? Or better yet, does it sound like that most pernicious of hypocrisies of fallen human nature? Self-interest wrapped in the cloak of self-righteousness. How about consistency? Operating room A, doctors are furiously working to save the unborn child of a pregnant mother involved in a tragic automobile accident. Operating room B, an abortionist doctor calmly killing a similar unborn child that a mother has chosen to abort. Consistency? How do we score that? The sanctity of life ethic. Does it sound familiar? For example, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think we all know where that comes from, the Declaration of Independence. We can't pursue our end of happiness without liberty. Therefore, slavery is a great, great evil. We can neither have liberty nor pursue happiness without having life. And therefore, abortion and murder are greater evils. Is the sanctity of life ethic true? We'll hold it to the same standard. Correspondence to reality. Human life is mysterious because from the beginning it involves the creative act of God, because its sole end is God. We are made in the image and likeness of God. Consistency. More and more, I think you know this, with stem cell research, possibly cloning, all of those violations of the dignity of life, the only public voice of consistency, which is the hallmark of truth, is the Catholic Church. From abortion through euthanasia, it is the only logically consistent choice. I have heard the greatest opponents on the life issue begrudgingly admit that at least the church is consistent, and it seems to give them at least a modicum of pause. As Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict would say, that is a start, right? A little start. If they at least recognize the consistency and don't have an argument, and it gives them pause. The last bit of evidence is this. When the woman who had an abortion inevitably feels the subsequent pain and horror for what she did, who is there to pick up the pieces and help her? I remember years ago when I was not in the seminary, I was single, and I started dating this woman. A few dates in, I remember how she felt compelled to want to tell me something. Now, two or three dates in, you know, does not a long relationship make, right? And she felt compelled to tell me something, and she had to tell me about the abortion she had. And it told me how deeply it remained with her day after day, you know, deep inside of her, this wound. Does Planned Parenthood pick up the pieces for her? Any program to help her since they supported the abortion? No, hardly. No, it's the tender Catholic Church that gives God's forgiveness in the confessional and has Project Rachel to help women heal through mercy and kindness. It's the strength of the church's message that allows the tenderness of her mercy, because her truth is so real and so consistent. As we celebrate the Eucharist today, we ask our Lord to help us grow ever closer to Him and recognize the great dignity of human life.